It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
And Grassroots Market is going to go ahead and talk now about the story of this last couple of weeks, the announcement from the DEA that they will be going forward with the process of rescheduling of cannabis from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. So there's a whole lot to be said in the story. We know that we talked about this already with our various guests and here on Blunt Business, the Grassroots Market. I just did a show on Blunt Business talking about that specifically, where we talked about what the Associated Press reported in terms of what's being done here. And with me, I have a guest that in the legal end that's going to help talk about this, because with the DEA plans to reclassify cannabis to the less restrictive Schedule 3, it has, what's being said here, a moderate, quote, to low potential for physical and psychological dependence. And my guest right now is here to offer some insight and perspective here on the legal ramifications of this new major development. I'm here with the head of the cannabis practice at Seaforth Shaw LLP, Stanley Jutkowicz. Stanley, thanks for being on.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you are one of the writers on a blog called The Blunt Truth, and your blog, and actually, or that's the blog for Seaforth, or Seaforth. And Seaforth, thank you so much for that. One of the things that was brought up in here was, quote, after that review, there would be a public comment period, which looks to be 60 days, although no firm timeline has been set yet, after which the DEA rule would be published and go into effect. Given the controversy surrounding both the rescheduling and legalization of cannabis, you said marijuana, but I always go with cannabis, what can I say? We would not be surprised if there's litigation that seeks to stop this rescheduling from going into effect. That I haven't heard until that right there in that blog. Do you feel like there's going to be pushback right now for rescheduling? And why would you think, how would that play out?
Yeah, I do think there's going to be pushback. First, a little bit more on the timeline. I think the way the timeline is going to work out is the OMB has up to 90 days to approve what the DEA wants to publish in the Federal Register. And once it's approved and published, there will be a public comment period of probably more like 90 days. It could be as short as 60, but I think for something like this, it might be 90 days. And assuming no changes in the regulations, which would require a republication and another comment period, and assuming no litigation, we're looking at, you know, I would say 6 to 9 months before this really goes into effect. And as to litigation, I've already seen some groups in the press announce that they are, quote, closely monitoring this and will file litigation to oppose once something is published. So I would not be surprised. I mean, there's still some fairly widespread opposition to the legalization of cannabis in this country. You know, this is, we'll give them another forum in which to put forth their views.
It's interesting that the DEA was tasked here with this here, because one of the things is that down the line, we have to consider that the DEA would be the governing body to which they will be overseeing a future legalization of cannabis. And right now they're already saying, I'm looking from a story from rstreet.org, talking about how that the DEA is ill-equipped to handle the roughly 15,000 cannabis dispensaries that would have to register and follow strict reporting requirements under the rescheduling. But the FDA approval of existing product is problematic. Traveling across state lines via air with state-legalized cannabis could trigger federal criminal penalties or until the FDA approves and regulates the industry. And I guess I get a little bit confused, but it's, what is it about these two agencies that what their roles are right now in the current process of rescheduling, and specifically, what will they be once there is a federal legalization or some kind of federal oversight?
good questions. The first question I think is a little easier to answer. Under the cannabis is now considered a Schedule I drug under five different schedules under the Controlled Substances Act. And under the Controlled Substances Act, the DEA has the statutory authority to reschedule. So that's why the DEA is involved in rescheduling. Now, if cannabis is rescheduled to Schedule III, just for some context, Tylenol with codeine is also in Schedule III. Right. And one interesting question, which I've not seen many people talk about, is the fact that, you know, Schedule III drugs are generally regulated heavily by the FDA. And the question, and you know, yet with cannabis, there's a whole state system that's sort of grown up with a parallel structure where you have regulatory agencies regulating the dispensaries and regulating cannabis on a state level. So it's going to be interesting to see how the federal government then proceeds to regulate cannabis. And one of the big questions is, you know, how long is this going to take? And will this hold up the legalization process or the regularization process, if you will, of having cannabis in the marketplace as another regulated substance under Schedule III? So, I mean, I think there are all these questions that still have yet to be answered, and you know, perhaps they'll be contained in what the DEA seeks to publish in the Federal Register once the OMB does its gives its approval.
It's just not clearly laid out as to where that would go, but that's something that the federal government would have to go and figure. And no matter what bill gets, whatever happens, when we get to that point, when we cross that road. And now I want to just take something that you made very interesting to me about that. There are multiple agencies, but that the DEA supersedes the others when it comes to rescheduling. And I had been told, no, say deschedule, reschedule. That's really what, but more importantly, to be said that way. But now, as you said, there are other agencies that are also involved. I'm looking straight from MedPage today. And they also talk about the fact that while there's the 1970 Controlled Substances Act that prohibits cannabis and cannabis products, there's also treaty obligations under the Single Convention on Narcotic Drugs, restricting cannabis and cannabis products for manufacture, trade, possession, and use. But meanwhile, the other side is there was a 2018 Agriculture Improvement Act that was designed to facilitate hemp production. And while cannabis products are considered federally legal at present due to those provisions in that act, there's a lot of there's still a whole lot of clutter here as to really identifying what's legal and what's not. I mean, when I hear that from you, Stanley, it feels like it's just not a clear-cut path that says, okay, we're going to get, there's things we're going to get from this, but what cannabis gets to become in terms of, okay, we can see the research, for medical research, we can see that being a proponent, that might be, that's obviously a positive. The removal of 280E restrictions, also a positive, but I'm trying to think out what else is there that businesses might really find as a real wherewithal. I mean, again, you have Tylenol and Codeine that can be dispensed in a pharmacy, but cannabis cannot, even if it is rescheduled, correct?
Right now, correct. There are no regulations. But let me take a step back and sort of amplify something you said. Cannabis generally refers to the cannabis plant. And the cannabis plant, there are two subspecies of cannabis. One produces marijuana. One produces hemp. Now, the legal difference is the amount of THC, the psychoactive substance in the plant that gets people high. And under the 2018 Farm Bill, if cannabis plant has less than 0.3% of THC, then it's considered hemp and is now legal. If it's more than 0.3, it's considered marijuana and and not legal federally. So that's the distinction. So hemp right now, as long as it's hemp with a THC content of less than 0.3%, is legal both at a federal level and in all 50 states. And that's it's the industrial hemp that produces the CBD that's being sold everywhere. And one caution with legal with rescheduling marijuana and the FDA or any federal agency issuing regulations is with the 2018 Farm Bill, the FDA has never issued regulations for CBD, and in fact,
no,
some time ago said they were not going to. So, you know, who knows what's going to happen with, you know, once marijuana is rescheduled.
I see, and that's really, that it's concerning this here, that because of the fact that FDA, we were waiting for a public comment. We had times of public comment, and it got pushed down the road. Scott Gottlieb was first on that, and then he just pushed it down. Everyone else has just pushed it down. There's no clear narrative here or any clear guidelines or directions for any products that are CBD, you know, that have CBD in them. So, you know, hemp-raised CBD, we don't have any kind of clarity to it. So any products can go on the shelf or go anywhere, and that's what's also a bigger an issue. Now, I want to come back to something about when it comes to dispensaries versus pharmacies, because in this MedPage City article, this also really stands out to me, because we are relying on the DEA. While they are giving us this distinction now of rescheduling, they're going to be more involved, and they're not equipped to be this involved, because if we wanted to go and see pharmacists dispense cannabis, that means the FDA and DEA would then have to start tracking a dispensary clients and patients. They would have to go and start, you know, putting mandatory federal oversight. The fact is that FDA is already understaffed, and if it needed more funding, the DEA would get more power to set quotas on cannabis production and sales. So for cannabis growers, they would be limited on how much they can go and grow on supply and demand if they want to be able to get into pharmacies. Obviously, there's probably more money and more access for patients, but do we want the DEA to have that much oversight, that much, you know, that much bureaucratic control?
Look, I think in some ways federal oversight is a good thing,
yeah,
if it's done efficiently and expeditiously. The problem I have is, will it be done efficiently and expeditiously? And I think we all have our views on you know, how efficient and expeditious the federal government is in various areas. In some areas, it functions very well. In other areas, you know, perhaps not so much. But I think this is a multi-year process, really. If you think about it, it's going to take a long time for various regulations to be issued for sort of regularizing the sale of Schedule 3 cannabis and Schedule 3 marijuana. You know, how is it going to be integrated? Another issue, for example, is current drugs for consumption have to be manufactured using what are called GMPs, good manufacturing practices. And right now, cannabis products and marijuana products are not governed by any GMP rules and regulations. And so what's going to happen at the manufacturing level with, you know, with gummies and tinctures and other types of processed marijuana? Will processors and manufacturers suddenly start to have to comply with the GMP requirements as any other manufacturer of a Schedule 3 drug? I mean, you know, Tylenol with codeine is manufacturing facilities that have to comply with GMP. So, you know, there are just so many layers to how this is going to become regularized, I'll call it, into the existing healthcare and drug and pharmaceutical regulations, that, you know, I think there are so many questions. I mean, the one The one good thing is the tax effects will be, you know, are pretty easy. By removing it, removing marijuana from Schedule 1 and moving it to Schedule 3, that immediately takes it out of 280E. But even on the tax side, you have questions. Will the IRS make the rules retroactive? So all of the marijuana companies that are ignoring 280E and have racked up huge hidden tax debt going to be forgiven? You know, will they have to pay it?
And, you know, you make that point. And I know Ascend Wellness Holdings, the MSO, is already trying to go ahead and test that theory right there if they're going to go back, because they're trying to go back 3 years to audit and hopefully recoup $10 million worth of, you know, taxes that they had to go and pay off that they shouldn't have had to pay under 280E. And if they don't get the IRS declines that, then I see a lawsuit coming. So we'll get the answer to that, I think, Stanley, soon enough. We just got to see. Somebody just has to go and push the button to see. Let's go ahead and try to see if we can get something to recoup to give forgiven for some of those taxes. Anyways, I want to ask one more thing, Stanley.
Don't forget the IRS has almost the perfect record in winning audits and lawsuits under 280E.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, boy. it couldn't.
And there's been a constitutional challenge to 280E. I think it was the Harborside case. The IRS won that one.
But I guess the risk for $10 million, if that company is willing to go ahead and pay the legal fees and make the attempt, I couldn't see why they don't do that. I can see why they want to do that, because also publicly traded, they want to be going to put that on their balance sheet. If there's any way to get that possible and to reinvest that company or that money, I understand taking the gamble on that if they were to do it.
Right. No, that's true. And, you know, I was a tax lawyer myself, and the tax bar, the cannabis tax bar, has come up with some interesting theories for trying to take the position that 280E should not apply to the marijuana.
Yeah,
I'm not sure of the efficacy of those theories, but you know, some of them are being tested in court, and some of them are taking, you know, that position on their balance sheets.
Right. I want to ask you now about decriminalization. So obviously the other part of the thought process was from the Biden administration, President Biden, is that the idea that with the rescheduling, that this was going to go ahead and help to take more people out of prison that were charged for using or possessing cannabis. But of course that's not happening. So even HHS said in a rescheduling memo that it's not scheduled, that arguably leads to greater harms. Well, now here's the thing. So it didn't happen to that. And even if you were to go and do something where, you know, if you had to go and go to a pharmacy to get dispensed cannabis, or even just going, taking it anywhere else, still, no matter what, you were charged and can be convicted and go to jail for possession or usage in some cases, but also this will not free anybody currently incarcerated on cannabis-related charges, not expunge criminal records. And the DEA right now is looking to attempt, this is a speculation, by the way, from experts, that they will attempt to tighten the loopholes following the sale of hemp-related compounds, prohibiting many currently available cannabis products, and significantly reduce access to non-medical cannabis products. So, I mean, I think we're getting a bait and switch here in some cases because the messaging from the Biden administration was supposed to be, okay, well, this is going to help this when it doesn't.
Well, that's a very interesting point. And again, I think I've been telling clients that the rescheduling is very much a case of be careful what you wish for.
Right.
Because there are going to be unintended consequences. Now, there's been a movement over the past several years that more states have legalized either medical or adult use cannabis to expunge records, to get people out of jail for having been convicted of crimes which are now, possession of marijuana, which is now state legal. And I think, I think that trend is going to continue. And unfortunately, it's not something that even if Congress wanted to, they could wave a magic wand, because many of these convictions are at the state level. And while Congress can pass laws, and there are folks like Cory Booker and others who are very actively pursuing the social justice side of cannabis legislation, the decriminalization and expungement of records, and just getting people out of jail, that will work at the federal level. It won't necessarily work at the state level. And that has to be done on a state-by-state basis. And, you can just think of the political leanings of various states, and that might be, and you may end up in a very unfair situation where those convicted of marijuana crimes in state A may get may have their records expunged and may be released from prison, whereas in states B, C, and D, you could have a different result because state law differs, and obviously state sentiment toward legalization differs.
It all comes down to the fact we have to go and have the federal government be involved in this more. While we appreciate, and I'll say this too, I'm not trying to go and put anything where the Biden administration was trying to do something that this was a bait and switch in terms of that this was going to hurt the industry. I think they were trying to do something that was going to help people in general. I think they probably thought that the idea that this would help to decriminalize, that this would help, in a lot of different areas, it would at least be a carrot into a bigger picture of what companies want to be able to go and do to be able to go and, further their cause and be able to go ahead and, sustain their businesses, because the 280 tax provision, taking that away, allowing listing on U.S. major exchanges, I think that's good. The fact that we're going to see now chances for nonprofit and commercial entities and others to be able to go and do research, further research to go and further show the importance of what's going on with cannabis and see the real benefits and effects. And that's great. All that together is great. More, investment and seeing maybe some more, bigger blue chip investment firms also wanting to go ahead and lend, maybe banking being a little bit easier to get in work and go by. Those are all good things. We have to take those as positives. It's not decriminalization. It's not legalization. Let's just make that clear. But as I always said, this is probably the best you're going to get from the Biden administration right now in this current term. And until we get more lobbying money out there that will reach the area of Big Pharma or surpass it, then we're not going to see a bill be put up in place, whether it's a state-by-state act or a full federal legalization across the board, if we'll see that come into play. But right now, as it is. Go ahead, Stanley.
Listen to what you just said. This is coming from the Biden administration, and the reason it's coming from the administration rather than Congress is because Congress has been unwilling to act in any meaningful sense for many, many years. And the Biden administration is doing what it can on a regulatory front. It can't, you know, like any government agency or government branch, it can't just, you know, wave a magic wand and have something happen, number one. And number two, any laws that are passed, I would say, always have unintended consequences. So you're right. There are many, many positives. You know, there may be some negative consequences to this, which either hadn't been considered or were considered and were thought to be a price that society should pay or would have to pay in order to go, you know, three steps forward. So it's, you know, it's a very difficult and complex issue, and people want to make it, oversimplify it by saying, let's legalize weed. Well, okay, but then you have a regulatory scheme. We haven't even talked about the you know, other regulatory issues that are going to come up, such as labeling, such as product testing. You know, all of these different regulatory schemes have to be implemented at some point. And this is not to say, therefore, don't do it. This is only to say, therefore, this will unfortunately be a slower process than many of us would like to see.
Right. But, you know, it's what we're going to get. Otherwise, you know, if we had to ask the president, he might still think he's working the Senate Judiciary Committee, you know, cross-examining Barry Seal for the next, like, 30 years, for all he knows. Like, you don't know any better. It's like, you know, I'm just saying, I think he still feels like it's like cocaine. I really think that the president probably thinks that he's going back to those days. It's narcotic. That's where he's going to go and gonna think about, because, you know, that's just not just being said. That's just old. It's just old thinking. It's just the way it is. Stanley Jukiewicz, head of the cannabis practice at Seyfarth Shaw LLP. Really appreciate you taking to join us. Now, before we go and wrap things up, I want to go and make sure that people know the website and go to that, seyfarth.com, S-E-Y-F-A-R-T-H. Again, S-E-Y-F-A-R-T-H.com. And when people go to the website, if they're looking to go ahead and seek out your team services, what should they do? And, you know, what would you want to go tell them in terms of having them go on board and, you know, what you're able to go and provide and who you can go and reach out, who could reach out to you if you're able to cover all markets? Tell us more.
Sure. Seyfarth, and that's S-E-Y-F as in Frank, A-R-T-H.com. We have a national cannabis practice, and we have offices in many of the major markets in which cannabis is already state legal. And we provide services ranging from general counseling, mergers and acquisitions, investments, labor and employment, environmental, bankruptcy, workouts. So we are, you know, as a large firm, we can cover most every area and can assist clients with cannabis. We also do risk assessment for public companies that want to engage with the cannabis industry. And that's a what I'll call a quieter part of the cannabis practice. And we also work on tax structuring. So we're pretty much full service in the cannabis space, and look forward to hearing from any of your listeners that have any questions. If they go to seyfarth.com, they could look me up, or they could type in cannabis practice in the search and come up with the full team of, I think we have over 50 lawyers in various aspects of cannabis all over the country.
Fantastic. I really appreciate you taking time out once again, Stanley. And thanks for being on with us. Really appreciate your insight on all this and really give us some clarity on some of the things that we really didn't know and getting to learn more about when it comes to rescheduling and what's going to be coming up once they finalize all the results and they finally go ahead and make the rescheduling official. Thanks so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.